Welcome to The Book Show, a celebration of reading and writers. I'm Joe Donahue. The new novel from Shalom Auslander includes, among its characters, Anne Frank. In Hope, a Tragedy, she survived the Holocaust and is discovered hiding in the attic of a house in rural New York State being rented by the book's main character. Auslander is a best-selling memoirist, short story writer, and regular contributor to the public radio program This American Life. With Hope, a Tragedy, he says he set out to write a comic novel about genocide. We welcome Shalom Auslander to this week's book show. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Was that really the mission?
Well, what's not funny about genocide? No, in the beginning, the challenge for me was broader, which was when you start out to write a novel, you need a character with a flaw, which is what they tell you anyway. And I thought it'd be funny if instead of alcoholism or abuse or dishonesty or gambling, his flaw was something positive, like hope. So it started with that, with thinking, well, if you've got this guy and his main, the thing that gets him in trouble is hope and optimism. And if he were more pessimistic, perhaps his life would be going better. That's where I started from. When I started sort of doing that throw rocks at your main character and till he falls out of the tree exercise, it was like, well, if I have this guy and he's moved, he's picked up, packed his bags, gone as far away from his past as he could, what would be the worst possible thing to happen? And for some reason, sitting in, you know, bread alone in Woodstock one day and working on it, it occurred to me the worst possible thing that would happen to me would be to find Anne Frank in my attic. Particularly because she's working on her second book and it's not coming easily. It's 60 years now of writer's block. And, you know, she has a lot to live up to.
She's older.
She's 83.
She's aged.
Incredibly high maintenance. Rather foul-mouthed as someone who, frankly, went through what she went through and lives in attics for the rest of her lives might be.
So enter Solomon Kugel, who is the main character, the hero of the story. Obviously, there are the comparisons to Job.
Right.
And intentional, I assume, from the very beginning?
Yeah, Job was the storyline from the very beginning, which was a good guy that lots of bad things happened to and then worse things happened to. I always felt like Job was a great book right up until the last chapter where God comes down and roughs him up and he goes, oh, you know what? I was totally wrong. God, you were totally right, and God gives him lots of money, and he walks away. And that seemed like somebody in Hollywood focus grouped that book before they published it, because the real ending is him telling God to go to hell and paying the price for it. He was a great character that way. So I wanted to just have my version of Job, where there is no redemption at the end, where he was right all along to feel the way he did. Once Anne Frank appeared in the attic, there was a funny other parallel that pleased me very much, which was the parallel to Metamorphosis, to Kafka's Metamorphosis. But I liked the idea of telling Metamorphosis from the family's point of view.
Right.
That, you know, we read it and it's a great story. And it's hilariously funny. And it's this guy, he turns into a bug and his family, all they can do is worry about their tenant and the daughter's dating life and this poor guy's a bug. But to me, it's always fun to take these sacred things, these holy stories of one kind or another, and just mess with them. So I thought, well, okay, that's, you know, bummer for him, but let's look at it from the family. I mean, how long are they supposed to keep this bug up there?
How much can they take?
Oh, are they supposed to raise a whole family of bugs up there and have them down for Thanksgiving and hang pictures of other related bugs on the walls over the piano? And it seemed to me that that's what Kugel was going through, that he had this monster in the attic that he couldn't bring himself to get rid of because of everything she stood for, even though his life would probably have been better if he had.
And there is also, at least initially, a reverence, right?
For her.
Yes.
Well, yeah, and he doesn't know for sure if it's her or not, but she did show him the numbers on her arm. So as he's kind of going through this in his mind about what to do or not do, he realizes that whether she's Anne Frank or not, she's a Holocaust survivor. and that in many ways it'd be easier to throw the real Anne Frank out of his house than it would be to throw a Holocaust survivor who's so screwed up by the Holocaust she thinks she's Anne Frank. That pity is just funny that way. And that kind of led me to what the book sort of is about, is at least for me, the fun part, which was taking these very sacred things and looking at them anew, and not in order to defile them, but in a way they become more sacred when you do that.
And with that, you can focus on the weight and the shadow of the Holocaust and amazingly find great humor there.
Yeah, because the humor isn't in suffering or death camps. The humor is in this guy's struggle to try and move on. And the issue isn't, was it horrible for her? Of course it is. And she tells him every horrible detail. But what's the situation is funny in that he's a good guy with a little kid and a very loving wife who just can't get past this question of do I get rid of the past or do I let it frankly haunt me? And that's where the humor comes from, his struggle with it. So it was when I first wrote anything about this, it was very, it was like Bugs Bunny. It was very silly and I didn't like it, but I had to get that version out. But then I get to this voice, which is taking the whole thing very seriously and straight. So when he and his wife are arguing, when he tells her that Anne Frank is in the attic and he can't throw her out, and she goes, well, I don't understand. What if Elie Wiesel shows up in the laundry room, you're not going to throw him out? And he's like, well, not if he knocks on the door, I won't let him in. But if I just find him there like I found her, sure, you know, I'm not going to throw Elie Wiesel out. Are you crazy? And she's like, oh, I'm crazy. And so it's all of a sudden these very real discussions would happen about a very ludicrous situation. But I kind of feel like that's what life is. It's a ludicrous situation that we have very real conversations about.
and it's that coping mechanism that we have and having humor in our utility belt that allows us to deal with issues that are unthinkable. And I assume the same for you as a writer.
Yeah, well, that's what it is for me. It's you know, there's that, you know, is it Nietzsche about staring into the abyss stares into you. But you can also laugh at the abyss. That's the thing that makes it all possible. And to me, it's a great revenge because I was raised very religiously and taught that God is a bit of a bastard and puts banana peels in front of you and laughs when you fall on them. And to me, the best thing you can do if you slip on a banana peel on a public road is to laugh at yourself. It's much funnier to everybody else if you're cursing life while you're sitting there rubbing your behind on the sidewalk and getting angry about it. But if you laugh about it, you win. And so I feel that way about life. If you just laugh your way through it, even at the particularly at the most horrible, dark things, you win.
And what you pull off, I find, is there's still a reverence.
Yeah, because to me, that's the only, there is that, no matter what you do. I think just poking fun at things isn't very challenging. But the hard thing is going, okay, look, I'm not looking to belittle Anne Frank. In fact, when I read the book now and when I finished writing it, I had a lot more empathy for her, the her that's 83 years old, than I did for this sort of angelic, two-dimensional or even one-dimensional little girl that I was raised to revere. Because that's something I can't go near. That's a religious icon, you know. I don't know it very well. But when I start to go, okay, well, what if she had lived? And what if she'd been so damaged? I mean, her story in this book is that she escapes Bergen-Belsen in the last days of the war. She died right at the end of it. In this version, she manages to escape, runs through the woods, gets to an old farmhouse, ransacks it for clothing and food, fills a pillowcase full of stuff, and then gets back out, comes out the front door and stops cold. And realizes that she doesn't want to be in the outside world, that the safest place she can remember, the warmest place she can remember, because she was so young when they went up into the attic, was the attic. She was there with her mother and her father and her sister. It was the last time they were all together. That, to me, is very heartbreaking, that somebody might actually react that way. I know I might. I didn't go through the Holocaust, and I want to go hide in my attic with my kid and my wife. I never want to come outside. So she suddenly became something that was more real, more important. and definitely more sympathetic to me.
The novel is Hope, a Tragedy by Shalom Auslander. It is published by Riverhead Books. We talked about some of the genesis of how you came upon the story, but was grappling the Holocaust and thinking about it and discussing it something that, A, you consciously wanted to do from the very beginning, and B, perhaps you always knew that you at some point would write about?
Well, B probably is always going to be a factor. There are just things I'm going to always talk about. Mm-hmm. Because they were so formative to me. But like I said, the main issue for me was a question of hope and optimism. And is that sacred cow wrong? Is that making things worse? If I wake up today and I think everything's going to go perfectly well, and life being what it is, it goes perfectly awfully, would I have been better off getting up in the morning and not expecting something great? And to me, that's the much bigger issue. That's the more sacred cow. By the time I'm struggling with that, particularly in our culture and in this country, where it's smile, everyone, smile, you know, Mr. Rourke, the Holocaust was small potatoes, frankly. It wasn't that big a deal compared to this whole life view of maybe optimism ain't the best idea.
Anne Frank in this novel at one point says, I'm sick of all this Holocaust crap.
Yeah.
And Kugel says the same thing, basically.
Yeah.
And so I assume a feeling you have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm sure I'm not alone in that. I think that, that's part of the question of the book is, what do we do with this? If you insist on living with Anne Frank in your attic, and never letting yourself move on from it. And I don't mean forgetting. In fact, at some point, Anne Frank, I believe, says, there's never forgetting and then never shutting the hell up about something. It's different. And so there's this question of, what do we do with it? What do we do with the Holocaust? What do we do with World War II in general? What do we do with the abuse that we suffered as children? What do we do with all these things? How do we talk about it to some degree, of course, but when is it time to not?
Because it is Kugel's mother who is really holding on to this history, which, interestingly enough, she never really lived through.
Right. She was the most fun for me to write because, yeah, I didn't know that. When I started writing it, it was a guy whose mother was a survivor. It was only in writing it that I discovered halfway through that she was faking it the whole time. And not for like nefarious reasons. She had a very difficult time in her own life and started obliquely referencing to it when people would ask her. And she has sort of this thing that I've noticed in certain people that gave birth to me, about loving suffering, about admiring agony, that there's no greater thing in the world that you can do than suffer. And so that was her particular thing, that suffering is a way of, first of all, getting over your guilt about not suffering, but it's also a pretty good way of defending yourself against future aggression. If you're paranoid all the time and don't ever let anyone forget about the wrongs that happened, then you'll be safer.
So as a result, that much of this novel centers around Kugel trying to figure out the relationship with his mother and his son.
Well, yeah, I mean, he's without the son, there's not really a story, because that's about the future. That's about, it'd be easy enough for him to just, if he were single, to put up with his mother and put up with Anne Frank and go down that road and just let it end where it ends. But to me, that's the closest part of me as an author. I feel that way, that I have two sons, a wife. It's a little late for me to kill myself, even though occasionally that seems like it might be a good idea. But the window of opportunity has passed on that. And I can't just walk around with two little boys saying, I can't go on, I'll go on. I have to find some kind of answer, some kind of message, some kind of something on the way to the kids' birthday parties to get through it all. And so that was why, that's the purpose of him having this son. He needs to figure out, what does he tell this son? He gets particularly angry at his mother when he comes home one day and his son's eating bread. And he says in the living room, And I asked him where he got it, and he said, it's grandma's bread. And he said, grandma gave it to you? And he says, no, it's from the couch. And this sends Kugel into a rage, because what mother's been doing is what she read in a book that some Holocaust survivors did as part of their post-traumatic stress, which is hiding food and bread around the house just in case. So she read that, and now she hides food around the house. And he yells at her, and he says to her, you're scaring him. And her response is something that I think is along the lines of things that I heard growing up, which was, well, somebody has to. That fear, and again, that fear and paranoia are going to save you. And you see that in our country. You see it in the Middle East. You see it everywhere. That this is the best way forward, is crapping yourself as a national defense policy.
Do you, and not to be overly psychological here, but do you find yourself needing to write a story like this to figure something out, or is it that you would not have been able to write this if you had not figured it out?
It's a bit of both. It's a bit of both. The former is definitely the start of it, that I have these questions. And since it was a psychological question, my shrink from the very first time I met him told me that one of my problems was that I have a nasty streak of optimism, that I tend to think things are going to go well, and I set myself up for failure.
Hope, a tragedy.
A tragedy, exactly. Yeah. And so I thought, well, let me play with that. I do remember coming back from sessions occasionally, paying a fortune for this, and coming home to my wife and going, "This guy's more cynical than me. I thought I was going to get cheered up." And so I wanted to see what happens if you push that idea a little bit further and take it seriously. And it's very counterintuitive, but it makes a lot of sense. And so I wanted to see what happened if I gave a professor, the Professor Jove in the book, this philosophy. And it was very reasoned out, horrifying, but very well thought out. And he refers to Hitler as not the biggest monster of the 20th century, but the biggest optimist. And that's why he was the biggest monster. And he was the biggest optimist because he actually believed that if he just killed this group and that group, the world would be a better place. And, you know, I've always felt like I've never heard anything more optimistic in my life than anti-Semitism. Mm. Or any kind of racism. Like, if we just got rid of black people, boy, everything would be better. If we just killed the Jews, there'd be no money problems. I can tell you this as a Jew. If you could prove that to me, I'd kill myself and my whole family just for the sake of the world. But the day after I do, things are going to suck just as much as they did the day before. That's the truth. So there's a certain optimism in that kind of hatred. And so I wanted to do that and see where it would go. And then to the second point, yeah, then having done that, I feel like then I can look at that and decide better how I'm going to use it.
One of the things that struck me in reading about this book, and I don't know if this bugs you, but it bugs me, and that is that it's constantly referred to as a Jewish book.
That's very aggravating.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't get it.
Well, I'm changing my name to Christy McChurch for the next one. So just so that I don't have to worry about that anymore. And then they'll say, what a Christian book.
Yeah.
There's no way around it. I would just, you unfortunately hope that that isn't going to happen. And I was very clear with my publishers here and abroad that I don't want anything on the cover with Stars of David or Anne Frank's picture or anything else. But they do refer to it that way. I think it's an easy thing to do. I think it's an easy out.
I was going to ask you about that because the cover, and I don't usually talk on the show about the cover, but it's such a great cover because it's a fawn in a field, and it's a beautiful picture of a fawn. Hope, a tragedy, and that's all scratched out as well as your name, which ultimately seems much more fitting.
I know, and it was an accident. The fawn references, there's a scene and with a fawn in the book, and there's also it sort of obsesses Kugel. He bike rides in the countryside, yeah, to try and de-stress, but all he can focus on is all the roadkill he sees, and he associates himself very strongly with deer who are too afraid to cross the street. But what happened was we decided to use a pretty stock photo of a deer, and they sent it to me, and it had this name and title on it, and the art director had crossed it out because all it was being sent to me for was to see the image. And I was just like, wow, that is really cool. Who came up with that? And they said, well, it's just a deer. And I'm like, no, the crossed out type is fantastic. So we kept it.
And it worked.
Yeah, it's one of those happy accidents.
This is your debut novel. You've written memoir, you've written a lot of short stories, you've written a lot of essays. Is this a comfortable format for you?
Yeah, very much so. And I'm doing other things now with this in terms of stage plays and screenplays, mm-hmm. but there's something about a novel in the way that it gets into a person's consciousness that just suits me. It suits the way my head works. And also, you know, I have a very strong connection to novels. I was raised, like I said, very Orthodox Jewish, and we didn't learn much about, you know, Gogol and Dostoevsky, and I stumbled upon a lot of this stuff as a teenager, going into the city to buy pornography and then spending money at whatever was left over at a used bookstore, and discovering these guys, and it drives me crazy now that books have this dusty, important thing on them, when to me they were punk. They were punk before punk was punk. Voltaire was punk ages ago. These guys were saying stuff that you cannot say. And bookstores, to me, should feel dangerous and outrageous. They should have the feds watching them at all times. And instead, they're watching rappers. And I don't get it. Books are crazy. And so I never had any love for pretty books. But books that raged and screamed, whether it's darkly or just humorously, were always the thing I loved. And so that's what I wanted to do. It just felt like, well, there's a place I could have a voice. There's a place I could do the same screaming.
I've read about your interest in Beckett, and I assume that comes a lot from that.
Yeah.
There's someone who's
Yeah, and
who's
I was
screaming.
Very lucky tonight to not have to go, to not have gone to college, because I think they would have ruined that for me. I think that they would have made, you know, that's the problem, is that literature has forced itself into a religion. And Beckett is now very serious. He is not. He wrote Godot because he was stuck on writing a serious novel and just wanted to write a fun play. And he'd seen Laurel and Hardy. And that's where it came from. And it's hilarious. It's not bleak at all. The guy's pants fall down before the last curtain. It's not a serious thing. Flannery O'Connor is hilarious. It's dark, but she didn't do readings because she couldn't get through one page of the story without laughing her head off, and always felt embarrassed or that the kids were getting upset at the colleges. These are things, you know, Kafka's famous stories about reading The Trial to his friends at a bar and cracking up, and they're all like, I think Franz had a little bit too much to drink. But it's these guys were all laughing and poking things and blowing things up. So, yeah, that's Beckett was certainly that. I mean, particularly for me with a mother that I have issues with, he and Faulkner did it in a different way. But also Faulkner had a lot of mother issues. But Beckett, you know, she's in a garbage pail. How can you not like that? What's not to like? And why is that playing in a serious theater? It should be, you know, it should be at the circus.
You talked about Flannery O'Connor, but do you find yourself still laughing when you read aloud portions of this book?
Well, I've been finding it still amusing.
Does it still work for you?
It still does, although it's been, you know, I've been on the road with it for 3 months, and I want to burn it, every copy of it I see now. But I still go, you know what? It doesn't make me laugh so much as, because it didn't really when I did it. It's just I look at it and I think, wow, I'm so glad that that's out there. Hmm. I'm glad those words, you know, if I'd found another book that said those things, then I could have taken the last 4 years off and not have to write it myself. But I'm glad that's out there. That's all I ask from it is, I'm just glad that that's out there.
Well, the name of the novel is Hope, A Tragedy by Shalom Auslander. It is published by Riverhead Books. Thank you very much for being with us. It's just a fantastic novel, and I thank you very much for sharing with us.
It is a fantastic novel.
I agree.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. We enjoy hearing from our listeners about our shows. You can email us at book@wamc.org. You can listen again to this or find past book shows at wamc.org. Sarah LeDuc produces our program. Bookmark us for next week, and thanks for listening for The Book Show. I'm Joe Donahue.